are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Nomiki Konst will be in studio, and we'll be talking about the House transmitting the articles of impeachment to the Senate. Impeachment managers from the House named all Democrats, no Justin Amash. Meanwhile, in the Senate, Republicans are feeling the heat on witnesses. And a Lev Parnas document dump reads like a low-rent Scorsese script. Meanwhile, we are 2.5 weeks from Iowa, and it's every woman and man for themselves on the Democratic stage. 10 Republican senators look to buck Trump in signing on to the Tim Kaine sort of weak tea war resolutions. War Powers Act resolution, I should say. And Trump finally to lift the hold on $8 billion worth of Puerto Rican disaster aid. Or I should say Puerto Rico disaster aid. And a new federal drug data dump shows 100 billion doses of oxy and hydrocodone shipped over an 8-year period. That's 24 billion doses more than had previously been revealed. Seattle bans multinational corporations from political spending in their cities. Hello, Amazon. And the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock, divests from fossil fuels. That's big. Lastly, an appeals court blocks that Wisconsin voter purge we had covered yesterday. But it's only for now. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, let me start off with multiple apologies. The first is I should apologize because I am exhausted and it will inevitably impact my performance today. We did not leave this office until about 12:15, 12:30, and my son had an earache. So there was very little sleeping that happened. The other apology is for why we left at 12:30 last night. At the during the course of the broadcast last night in covering the Democratic debate from Iowa, we had Alex Perrine here as a special guest. And at one point, Virgil Texas from Chapo Trap House came by. Later in the broadcast. And then, as we were wrapping up the night's coverage, we were basically studio invaded. I mean, a home invasion, but this obviously is not our home, by the ruffians from Chapo Trap House, the entire crew. And
not the entire crew, but...
Will. Not the entire crew, but yeah. Four-fifths. Four, six.
Felix came in at the end.
Who else was Amber. Here? There was
Amber
a lot
was
of
here
people.
For a second.
And Amber was here for a second. And they bum rushed the studio. As you can see here, these are shots from our video production. And that is, of course, they drank all our whiskey. Is really what happened.
Matt Chrisman poured him a nice big glass of that.
Yeah, I actually It's one of the rare times where I was literally aghast. Like I've seen some things, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not a stranger to people drinking large glasses of whiskey. I've just never seen it quite. You know, I've seen people drink multiple glasses of whiskey, but I've never seen someone pour it with that much, and in one time.
We got to give credit where credit's due. Perrine drank a lot of the whiskey too.
He did too. That's true. But things got out of hand. So I want to apologize to all of you. That video is available to our members. You can go to today's members post, and there will be a link to that video. So you can check it out. I think our coverage of the debate was good. By the second half of the debate, we started getting a little bit, drunker and a little bit more bored with it, I think. We're going to talk more about the debate with Nomi, but you can check that out if you're a member. I want to thank our members for your support. And you can become one of those members at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you go there, you sign up, you'll get access to all of the archives, and you get extra content every day. In addition to occasionally, we have an extra content.
It certainly was extra.
That was extra. And that was actually a lot of fun. I have a feeling that may happen more often going forward. But And you support this show, and we give you the free show, a commercial free, you know, the whole deal. So it's a jointhemajorityreport.com. If you are one of those people who have sent us an email, because you would like access to the fun half of the program and, don't have the financial resources, just give us a little more time. We will get to it. We're digging those emails out. All right. And this, one more, note of house cleaning. This is pretty exciting stuff. As you know, Michael Brooks has not been in a studio all this week. Now, a lot of you are like, okay, why is this week different than any other week? So he's not in studio. What? Why would you even note that as some type of happening? Well, this is one of those occasions. Well, let's face it. This is the only one of those occasions where Michael has an actual reason that doesn't involve some type of lie about his plumbing or something. And that is, Michael traveled down to Brazil. I'm not sure exactly where was he?
I don't know.
I don't know what the specific location was. And he interviewed Lula. As Brendan described it earlier before the show, this is like celebrating, like this is like when your friend has a baby. So congratulations to Michael. As you can see in this picture, he is ecstatic, and Lula looks a little bit nervous. I suspect that this was after the interview, it seems that Michael was happy, in this picture.
I think they're going to have a long, happy life together.
That's right, yes. They make a great couple. Michael will be coming back. I don't know. I mean, he's probably already back, but I don't expect him to be coming on the show in the next couple of days because he'll need to rest up. You will be able to check that out, presumably on TMBS. I would imagine next Tuesday, but we don't know the details on that. So you can check that out on his YouTube channel. But be sure to pass this video around to your friends to let them know about Michael's thing, because we want to just show him. And we're just going to title this clip something that will be confusing with the actual interview. So there it is. There. All right. Let's. I want to get in. We've got two big stories today. One is that Nancy Pelosi has announced that they will be voting on the articles of impeachment later this afternoon, and they have chosen the impeachment managers, and they have been named. Also, of course, we're going to review the debate. Before we get to that, Donald Trump was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. his first visit was in Ohio, correct? I mean, his first rally, which was a week or two ago in 2020. He is in Wisconsin. This guy understands where this election is going to be won and lost. And Milwaukee, of course, is well, Wisconsin. Milwaukee is actually the site of the DNC in 2020. And Ohio, of course, parts of Ohio, or I should say, and where did he have that? It was in Toledo. The reason why you go to Toledo to do a rally is because you're going to hit parts of Michigan's of Michigan in terms of coverage. And so Donald Trump understands where he's got to focus for this election. It's going to be, again, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. There may be a couple other states, but those are the ones that he knows he has to turn. Or I should say not turn, but keep hold on. Here he is. Digging deep into the conservative playbook. As you may or may not know, in 2007, under the Bush administration, there was a bipartisan support for creating more energy efficiency. Why would one do this? Why would you want more energy efficiency? Well, because our energy, as it is now, is produced by largely, and particularly in 2007, by fossil fuels of some sort. And when you have more energy efficient appliances and light bulbs, that means you're producing less carbon dioxide, which means that you are not contributing to the or you're contributing less to the factors that are driving climate change. But conservatives felt that this was a major infringement upon our individual liberties to have inefficient light bulbs. And since those days, I don't know when it actually went into effect now. I think it was during the Obama years that it actually was phased in. We now have just incandescent light bulbs. They're a little bit more expensive, but they're far more efficient and they last longer. Or LED light bulbs, which are fantastic now. Initially, they weren't so great. They were a little bit of harsh light. Now they're great and they last forever. Not literally forever, but for a long time. But when your supporters are Republicans, it can still be an issue. And here's Donald Trump trying to make hay. Should we do? Yeah, let's do number two.
Somebody said, "Oh, sir, don't mention the light bulb." You know, it's hard to make an elegant speech. I'm saying I brought back the light bulb. So the new light bulb costs you five times as much, and it makes you look orange. And I was more interested in the orange than I was in the cost. But you know what? If you want, you have it. And you know, the new bulb, I don't know if you see it. It's on there. It's a hazardous waste that when that bulb ends, you're supposed to take it to a certain dump. And gingerly put it.
Okay. That's a lie. There was a, you know, the idea was that it's all going to be not LED, the, what do you call it? The fluorescent lighting, and that it was full of mercury and that it was going to be a problem, and it wasn't. And now the bulbs have been replaced by LEDs anyways, and it never said hazardous waste, and it was all a lie. But here he is. He's delivering his comedy routine about the orange. I mean, you know, that is actually like... His self-effacing comedy is an interesting turn, and he's getting looser and looser up there. Now, I wonder if he has taken artificial lubricants, but here
is struck by his aphasia in that clip.
Yes.
Like he can't think of burns out. Can't think of the word for when a light bulb ends.
When it ends. And the bulb ends. Here he is. He's going after energy efficient appliances in 2020. But I should tell you this. That Trump's administration, they reversed the light bulb regulation. It will boost energy costs by $14 billion a year. So you'll pay more for the light bulbs that you use because they're less efficient. You just won't pay more for the light bulb themselves under if what he thinks will happen will happen. It will generate 38 million tons of carbon dioxide annually. Now, it's quite possible that this is like a situation like the cars, where he wants to lower CAFE standards, and the car companies, even with California not being allowed to maintain higher standards, just say, you know what? Not going to. No, because eventually we know we're going to have to go back to here. And why would we go back to the inefficiency when we know we're going to have to go forward? Like, there's no future here. I mean, this is like the BlackRock story, where you have trillions of dollars that are being invested in fossil fuels, and they make a decision, we're no longer going to invest in fossil fuels because they know this is not the future. And it just doesn't make any sense. This is how demented the Republican conservative mind is.
They're hungry for the rapture. They don't care if the world ends. They want the world to end so all us Jews can go to hell.
I want the inefficient appliances, please, Mr. President.
But I say, leave it. It's so inelegant to talk about it, right? Right? Isn't it inelegant? I'm talking about dishwashers. Wait till you hear the next one. I'm talking about refrigerators.
Yay!
Probably won't in the State of the Union. I'll leave it out because I want to get praise for making it. You cannot make a brilliant speech where they say that was such an incredible, elegant speech if I'm talking about dishwashers, sinks, toilets, light bulbs.
I beg to differ.
But sinks, toilets, and showers, you don't get any water. They put restrictors on, and now they made them permanent. People used to take them out. They put restrictors on. Try going and buying a new faucet. You turn it on, no water comes out, right? We won't talk about toilets, but you know that's a...
By all means.
10, 15, but we don't talk about that. Because I've said this three or four times, the only subject they ever talk about is toilets, so I don't mention toilets. But how about the shower? You go into a shower, and I have this beautiful head of hair. I need a lot of water. And you go into the shower, right? You turn on the water, drip, drip, drip. I call the guy, is something wrong with this? No, sir, it's just the restrictor. So you're in there five times longer than you're supposed to be. You use probably more water, and it's a very unpleasant experience, right? So we're getting rid of the restrictors. You're going to have full shower flow. Full sink. Did you ever go to the faucet? You turn on the faucet to wash your hands, and it turns on so easy. It's like this, you know, because there's zero pressure behind it, no water. You go like that, the thing flips on, and whoa.
What's the deal with faucets?
Well, I had that Seinfeld thing for you.
Sorry.
He's doing a comedy routine, and here it is. Well, okay, I just sent it to you. But yeah, right. There you go. Yes, that was the one there. But I, you know, that is, I think that's going to prove effective. And, you know, that is a hard thing to, he's getting comfortable with it now.
He's really good at speaking to Americans in the way that they're most empowered, which is as consumers. So you talk about like the wall, and it's all about the different types of materials we can do for the wall. And what's like a big purchase Americans make is their new dishwasher, their new fridge. He's speaking to him right. That's American culture. Right
there.
I don't know. If I were him, I would not call attention to the fact that I've got toilet issues. I feel like there's probably garbage disposals in all the White House toilets at this point in time, considering his diet, and I don't really want to think about that.
Well, but I think that humanizes him to them. I think that he's just like our buddy. He doesn't think he's better than us.
Yeah, he eats the same shit that every American does.
He is going more populist with that stuff, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that stuff going in the future. Let me just get a couple ads, and then we're going to have Nomi has entered the building.
I'm so sad Michael wasn't here to be traumatized by my toilet humor.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, folks, support from today's show comes from Kariuma. They're a direct-to-consumer sustainable sneaker brand with high and low top styles. They're good-looking. They're crazy comfortable. And the reason why I know you guys are going to like it, consciously made. They do it all. They have new, like old school design, new school ethics. Check this baby out. I got a pair of these. They remind me of my Chuck E. T's, but all due respect to that brand, better support because I'm old now and they're just better looking. These are, they're leather. This is premium natural materials. They have fair trade cotton. They source responsible from ethical tanneries for leather, suede, and natural rubber. And they even just launched a 100% vegan and carbon neutral sneaker. It's made with 3D bamboo knit, and recycled PET. The outsoles are made from sugarcane and a cork and organic Mamona oil inside. Nuts, right? It has recycled and recyclable laces, threads, and labels. And better yet, Kariuma makes up for carbon emissions released during the transportation by buying carbon offsets and creating a shipping footprint of exactly zero. like I say, folks, these are beautiful sneakers. I am now dressing more like an adult every day. It's taken a long time. But I don't like, you know, I don't like fancy shoes. I like a pair of sneaks that also make me look like I'm not, you know, trying to look like I'm a teenager. And it's a good feeling to know that my shoes are ethically manufactured, ethically sourced. And when they're shipped to me, carbon balance of net of zero. And for a limited time, our listeners can get an exclusive 15% off your first pair of Kariuma sneakers. Go to Kariuma, Kariuma.com/majority to get 15% off today. That's Kariuma, Kariuma.com/majority for 15% off. And, I don't know me. I don't know if you've ever tried these, but as you know, it's New Year. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. Happy New Year to you as well. I'll tell you what, Nomi, it is time for you to get comfortable with new bedding. Yep. home of the internet's favorite sheets, Brooklinen has over 50,000 plus 5-star reviews and counting. They got bedding. They have, well, I guess, I'm having that aphasia now where you can't, they have duvets, but they have duvets and they have,
Shams?
the heavy thing. What about
the mattress?
Comforters?
No, the comforters. Yeah, they have comforters. They have loungewear, towels. They have more. They have all that. No, it's awesome.
I really didn't get any sleep.
I did not get any sleep, but at least I was comfortable because I was on my Brooklinen sheets. As you know, folks, I have a weird living arrangement because of my divorce, and I have multiple sets of Brooklinen sheets in multiple locations, and
all in Brooklyn,
actually.
How appropriate.
Yep, there you go. Now they have shower curtains and bath mats. That's where I'm going to get my next one. I got to wait for some of them to wear out, but I'm upgrading my towels. And they've even now launched ultra soft loungewear that makes you feel like you never left bed. It's a direct to consumer company, so you get all the luxury products without the luxury markup. Softness, comfort, essentials to help you relax. Brooklinen has it all. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to hit refresh in the new year. Go on, make yourself comfortable, folks. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, their comforters, I remembered, towels come with a lifetime warranty forever. Well, for as long as you're alive. You get 10% off your first order and free shipping on the all-new sheets when you use the promo code MAJORITY only at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen, brooklinen.com. And New Yorkers, if you're listening, you can get the internet's favorite sheets and more in real life. You can visit Brooklinen's first store in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. That's right in your hood, right?
No, I live in Astoria. Right. That's why it took me forever to get here.
She complains about it every time.
127 Kent Avenue in Williamsburg. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. And lastly, the Majority Report is possible thanks to sponsors like Skillshare. Anyone who goes to skl.sh/majorityreport5 is going to get 2 entire months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of thousands of online classes. Skillshare is an online learning community for everyone from creatives to freelance to business owners to people who just want to get better at your hobby or learn a brand new hobby. Skillshare classes range from illustration, painting, graphic design, photography, video editing, web design, bookkeeping, marketing, productivity, everything in between. They have video lessons that help you learn at your own pace. You can fit in any schedule. They break it down almost into like chapters. But I guess I don't know if they call it chapters, but it's like chapters. So, you can look at 2/3 of a lesson and then head in later. Whether you're already a master at what you do or you're just getting started, their classes are for all skill levels. I have taken classes like just to get an overview. I don't want to spend too much time doing it, but stuff like the Excel spreadsheets. I know. I just want to know. There's like I like to have a basic knowledge of all operational things. Don't look at me like I'm crazy.
Don't know how to use Excel spreadsheets?
Well, I didn't. I didn't know how to do like a sum thing and stuff that.
Yeah.
I
mean, pivot
I didn't
table.
Know. Yeah, I mean, I know how to like open it up, but I didn't know how to like.
I was a little concerned here.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I didn't know. I had never. There was no occasion for me to do that, but that's how I learned. And it's, you know, basic stuff, but there's also stuff that gets you even more. Like this is what's in my queue, as it were, becoming an Instagram influencer, creating authentic content, and monetizing your following. Now, we have an Instagram channel, but I just want to get a basic notion so that I can talk to our artificial intelligence bot that does all the Instagram stuff.
Really? You don't do it?
I don't
say
personally
you're killing
do
it.
I don't do it. No,
maybe
no.
Maybe it's been really good.
No, it's our bot, Dorsey.
Mm. Automation. I want my UBI.
There you go. And and also I've got lined up a graphic design basics, core principles for visual design. Why do I want to know that? Just because I have no sense of design. And having just an ability to look at this and say, this is good or this is bad, I want to be able to do that. And you can make 2020 a year where you explore new skills. You can deepen your existing passions. You can find new ones. Skillshare makes it easier than ever. Like I say, most classes are under 60 minutes. They're split up into individual chapters or lessons. So it's easy to fit in a couple of lessons, you know, in the morning and then come back at night and pick it up. And it's easy. You don't have to pay per class. Membership at Skillshare gives you access to each and every class that they offer. You'll never run out of ways to fuel your curiosity. And the best part, a membership is less than 10 bucks a month. But Majority Report audiences can enjoy 2 free months of membership. And then with full access to all their classes, when you go to skl.sh/majorityreport5. That's the number 5. We put the link in the podcast notes or under the video if you're watching on YouTube. Check it out. That's skl.sh/majorityreport5. That's the number 5. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, in studio with us, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the program, Nomiki Kantz. Nomiki, welcome.
Thank you for having me. And I'm so sorry. I'm once again late.
That's all right. No.
I think I'm going to put in like an hour and half 45 minutes to
we gotta get you a helicopter to get over here. That's basically I think what it's coming down to. All right, now we're gonna touch on impeachment in a bit. The articles are heading over there. There's been some this stuff with Lev Parnas is nuts. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely nuts. But let's talk about what's going on with the debate and what happened with
handshake
Bernie
gate?
Well, yeah, I guess look, we've talked ad nauseum about the the exchange between Bernie and Warren in regards to what they said. There was a reprise of it. Do we have a clip of that as well from last night? All right, let's play that first. This is you know, we anticipated. I will say, to their credit, CNN held off. They waited the 45 minutes. Now, of course, on the West Coast, that's, you know, that's the heart of prime time.
I feel like they know the sweet spot. I was thinking about this last night. Like, there's a sweet spot. They bore everybody to death in the beginning because it was really boring. And then
the Iran stuff, I thought, was interesting. There was a couple of things up front where I was impressed. And maybe we can pull this from about 14 minutes in when Bernie talked about the mistakes mm-hmm. of Vietnam and Iraq, because it got very quiet. And that was a very sort of like intense moment. But let's do we have that? Okay, well, let's play this then. Well, this is the one that everybody anticipated. And it didn't go exactly as CNN, I think, imagined, or this questioner did, because she didn't seem to listen to the answer in any way. It was very odd, but here it is.
Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
Oh, wait. Okay. That's we don't have the full clip. Prior to that, Bernie had said, you know, of course, Hillary Clinton got 3 million votes. I held back last time to wait for Elizabeth Warren to come into the race, which is certainly I was aware of that. I think we've mentioned it on the show over the past couple of years. I think, you know, to the detriment of his campaign, frankly, but at that time. But Warren had all the heat and she decided not to step in. Give me your take on the whole kerfuffle, not just the fact that CNN, basically said, we're not going to listen to your answer. Right. I mean, that was just bizarre and so bizarre that we'll play a clip in a minute about that. But
well, I mean, I don't want to dwell on the CNN, what's happening at CNN, right. But I will say that they don't even internally have it right. On one hand, you have people saying, well, it was reported out. It's a report. So if it's a report, it's true, which right. As somebody who's been the recipient of a report, I can tell you firsthand that, you know, a lot of news organizations now don't have fact checkers, don't run things through legal, or just don't care. But with that being said, you still had Anderson Cooper, you still had Aaron Burnett, come out and say that it was a he said, she said, you know, it was fed by the Warren camp. In many ways, these are hosts of CNN who have a little bit more power to do so, saying, yeah, okay, it was a report, but it's not entirely verified. So right. They're not going to attach their reputations to some story that seems to have gotten out of hand. Now, with all this being said and done, it's disappointing. I think we're at a state in the movement, not necessarily just the campaign, but in the movement where we have to be very aware that not everybody is our friend. And I don't mean Warren. I mean people who might work for Warren, people who might be advising right. Warren, people who may have endorsed Warren or are helping out. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some entities that supported Warren that have independent expenditures who are pitching out negative stories that she might not even be attached to, because there's been some evidence that even internally in the Warren camp, they didn't agree with this strategy.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that, you know, maybe people were left out of the conversation, but it seems like they threw a hand grenade not to win, because as of right now, Warren's path to victory, even as a second choice in Iowa, is not the strongest. And if you did want to have a path, it wouldn't be by pissing off the very loyal Bernie supporters.
You know, okay. All right. I have a theory. Now, I happen to agree in terms of its efficacy. Mm-hmm. And I spoke about that yesterday. But and in part, the what happened afterwards has mm-hmm. changed my opinion slightly. Let's play that clip now. This is the handshake.
Okay.
And here it is. This is at the end of the night, Warren heads over to Bernie, and Bernie extends his arm to shake her hand, and she blows it off.
That's some cold shit.
And And she's like, I want to talk about something, something, something. And he says, you and I can talk. We'll talk later about that. And then Tom Steyer comes rushing over.
He's a perfect person for that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you guys in the middle of talking about something? So I have an alternate theory, and it's a slightly it is a different one from what my take on this was yesterday, which is that this was just broadly, I think it's a mistake. I don't think it's helpful for Warren. But I have an alternative theory about what their strategy is, and that is one, they wanted to show that she will fight. Mm. And the reason why she wanted to show that she would fight and, you know, some people are saying stick a knife into Bernie or whatever it is. And I don't think it, frankly, is going to be effective.
Right.
I don't think the idea is that she's looking for Bernie supporters.
No, not at all.
I think the idea is she wants to show those people who support Biden, mm-hmm. but like her more mm-hmm. as a candidate, but think that a woman can't win. Or a woman, or that she's not tough enough to go with. I think she was trying to communicate that to the Biden and Buttigieg voters, who she is their second choice. Right. And unlike the people for whom Bernie supporters, when Warren is their second choice, it's because of ideology.
Yes.
When you're a second if you're a Biden or a Buttigieg supporter, and Warren's your second choice, there's a higher chance that the reason is because you don't think she can win.
Right.
And you think that Biden or Buttigieg could win. And so I think that she was trying to communicate, and this was the only way. Who am I going to take out? Mm-hmm. And I think this was her way. I think that she is thinking she's going to get supporters from there. I think she might be thinking, I think her campaign might be thinking that it's really going to be more of a that she's going to take people from Biden and Buttigieg first and strengthen herself going into the campaign. I don't know if that's going to work or not.
Right.
Because I think on that particular issue, frankly, all you're doing is sort of like raising the fears that you're not really fully addressing them.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know. That's my only theory as to what they're doing, because this is a conscious effort. I mean, I've been talking to if not the same people that you have, but at least, you know, sort of like hearing those same things, mm-hmm. that this was, they had no control over those four people who came out and spoke to the press, that they were just responding to this, mm-hmm. And that some people, you know, certain people have been isolated and you know, they're only listening to a certain group of people, which I think is true. But I just think those people have a certain theory, and I think, it is crunch time, and they're trying to figure out where they're going to get support from. And I think you're starting to see a couple stories today that are talking about they want to prove that they can fight. And so, you know, look.
I mean, that was her messaging last night. If you think about it, she was saying, there's two women on stage who have beat Republicans. And again, I don't even know how effective that messaging was. What's blaringly obvious to me at this point is that her team is really, really ill-equipped for this kind of strategy.
Agree.
This is, you just basically ruined a progressive senator's reputation with the movement based on some cockamamie scheme that has a 2% chance of even effectively working. And maybe the alternative is, if it doesn't work, she lines up with Joe Biden. She is literally, let's just be honest here, she is doing Joe Biden's dirty work. Joe Biden is winning right now. You know, he's going down in the polls a little bit, despite what he says. He's winning right now, and yet he was not questioned at all.
Well, that's true.
By anybody.
Well, I mean, Bernie did a little bit in terms of Iran and Iraq, but Bernie also didn't go after him. I mean, look, they're all, I mean, you know, this is the same thing that happened with Trump. Like, you be the guy to take him out. I don't want to take him out. I don't want to alienate his voters. And Bernie doesn't want to do that. Warren doesn't want to do that. And so that, I mean, I think projecting that she is going to make this calculation that she can fight. Mm-hmm. I think this is by design. And I think it's, I think, you know, I don't think it's necessarily like a sister soldier thing. I just think that they should have found something else.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah, this is why people hate and mistrust Washington and all the barely human insects there. Like, I reacted to this story on a human level, like most people probably did, and thought, oh, I can't believe that Bernie's friend would stab him in the back like that. I didn't even think of the real explanation until Sam told me this morning, and I was like, oh, that makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But they're operating so many levels removed from any normal mode of human interaction that people would recognize.
And Iowans don't like this kind. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Iowa, but they're you know, they don't like this kind of game playing at the end of the day. But will it move 2%? Will it? I mean, I think she's going to lose just as much support as she gains from Biden world. But, you know, you mentioned something really interesting because I was watching, you know, the morning shows and late night last night and all the surrogates out there who are pouncing on Bernie and suddenly supporting Warren, you know, the Karen Finneys of the world from the DNC. These are the folks who we were fighting in 2016 with the smear efforts. You know, they're the ones who knew very well that the lies that were coming out of their mouths were lies.
Yep.
And here they are again, just recycling the same talking points from 2016. You could literally clip them back to back. This is Karen Finney in 2016. This is Karen Finney in 2020.
Well, actually, it's funny that you say that. Karen Finney was on...
on cue. Look at that.
Karen Finney was on Jake Tapper's program. And this was... This is their attempt. Now, I don't know if it was effective last time. To be honest with you, I don't know if it was. Maybe it was, but I don't know if it was. I just don't think it's going to work in the same way this time.
Right.
And so, you know, but this is, you know, well, here's Karen Finney on with Jake Tapper.
You know, it's not just about what may or may not have been said in this conversation. Bernie came.
Pause it for one second, too. Let me just say one thing about this conversation. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself. When this first came out, I tweeted out that I have talked to many people, but mostly women, who some supporters of Warren, some would-be supporters of Warren, who articulated to me at various times over the past couple of years a fear that a woman in this environment against Donald Trump cannot win, that he has some special powers of activating misogynistic feelings. I think that is true, that misogynistic feelings. I think a woman can win in this environment. But the idea that Bernie would have articulated that to Warren is not that controversial. Rebecca Traista wrote a very good piece on this in the Cut. And she made the point, which I had also made the point the other day, which is that this centers, and it's unfortunate, people who are, the subject and victims of misogyny, by talking about it in this context, they center this misogyny and they raise those same fears. I mean, that's why I think they should have done, if they're going to go after Bernie, they should have done something different.
Right.
Because this is, raising this cuts both ways. You're reminding them. You're reminding these voters why they're afraid of supporting
you. That's right.
And the Streisand effect.
Yes. And if you don't have a really excellent closing answer, all you've done is basically edified their position.
Right.
And so I don't think they didn't fish. It was not fish nor fowl. They didn't get there. So they're trying this, or at least Karen Finney is, and I don't think that's going anywhere.
You know, it's not just about what may or may not have been said in this conversation. Bernie came into this race with a bit of a legacy. The Bernie bros were known to have been horrible to women online. I know plenty of women who would say things like, I mean, there were secret groups of women who didn't want to have to deal with the Bernie bros, so they didn't want to engage online. And the Bernie bros, again, they're pretty obnoxious, and they're very sexist and misogynist. So part of it is, you know, it's part of the reason why when he endorsed Cenk Uygur and then had to pull that back because of those comments. I mean, he did come in with an impression, and a lot of women still feeling pretty raw from 2016 about the fact that, you know, he didn't stand up for Hillary or have her back or campaign for her, I think, as vigorously as he could have. But also, you know, he never really took on the Bernie Bros and said, let's calm down.
That's not true. I interviewed him and I did ask him about the Bernie Bros and he said nobody should be saying things like that. Nobody should be doing things like that.
But he didn't say it in French.
That is not the same thing as saying you should not be threatening people. What? You should not.
When it comes up, he mostly ignores it. But you're right. When confronted by a respected journalist, he says the right thing. But I think it's just that Bernie generally, and I'm going to...
He's not respected.
He thinks of this as identity politics. It's the same way he doesn't engage
people of color.
He doesn't really engage women. He doesn't think about
the country that way.
He thinks in terms of class, not in terms of other demographics. And so
Hillary Clinton's surrogate panel with two Republicans to talk about the progressive base of the primary. What?
Right. I feel like this is very triggering, especially for me and Nomiki right now.
Oh, my God. I thought Nomiki was going to have a heart attack. It was like, this is...
I'm having PTSD.
I know, I could tell that.
This, you know, okay, in 2016, at least we had Bernie people on the panels.
Right.
We don't have that. And Warren is a cover because you have people like Van Jones, who they're like, I remember being in the room with the talent person at CNN, and she said, well, we have Van Jones. And I said, that's great, but he's not a... Of course, he loves Bernie. But last night, he was defending Warren. And as long as Warren is in the race, they have their progressive to represent the progressive side.
Right.
But here we are with two consultants who have literally made millions of dollars off of Hillary Clinton and attacking Bernie Sanders on that panel, not disclosing that. You know, these are not commentators. These are not journalists. These are people who make money.
Yep.
Off of tanking the movement.
That's so whack.
Yeah.
That should not be allowed. In a healthy democracy, that wouldn't be a thing.
But, you know, here's why I don't think this is... I think this is going to fail. Because no one that... None of the people that Karen Finney is talking about are supporting Sanders right now.
Right.
And even if they're supporting Biden... Right. Which I think is the target audience is, right? We're going to get these, you know, Buttigieg and Biden supporters who have Warren as their second choice, and we want to move it into first choice. They're still not, all they're doing is identifying a problem, and that's not enough to get them, because those people have already identified the problem. They have not provided the sort of like bridge. Mm-hmm. Now that we're in the circle of trust or whatever it is, the communication, you know, the comms thing that they tell you to do. Now that we're in there, we share the same vision of what the problem is. They haven't offered the bridge.
Can you explain that? I don't know if people get that. The circle.
The
messaging.
One of the messaging things that they always tell you to do when you go on a TV show, if you're like an advocate for something, is to sort of acknowledge, to find some connection so that the viewers say like, oh, they understand my problems, or they experience things like I do.
Like the light bulbs.
Like the light bulbs. Like, yeah, those light bulbs are a pain in the ass, aren't they? But... And then you can say, now that we've all agreed they're a pain in the ass, but I'm going to tell you why actually they're good for you. Mm-hmm. Or, my mom struggles with paying for healthcare, just like your mom. And here's why, now that we're on the same page, here's my solution.
Right.
They're not doing the second part.
Right.
And all they're doing is triggering the first part, which in this instance is what's inhibiting... Warren's campaign. So I don't think that's going to work.
Oh, I think it's awesome. I miss 2016. I want to go back there. The more people act like they did in 2016, the happier I'll be.
I literally have PTSD right now watching this. It's very triggering. But just real quick, something to remind, you know, what that her real thing that she has to close right now. The people that she's trying to woo over from Biden's team and Buttigieg's team that could be friendly are still the same people who think that she cannot be Donald Trump. She's the only top four candidate who, in a head-to-head matchup, does not beat Donald Trump right now. And we have to keep that in mind, because this is the same team, as you and I both know, that has been the Warren team, that has been pitching, you know, a coalition of electability to end, to fix the electability argument. She has not bridged that gap on the electability argument. And it's not, maybe it's a little bit because she's a woman, but I think it's frankly because she botched her DNA thing and it was
self-inflicted wounds. Yeah. And I think there was a self-inflicted wound on the Medicare for all thing. Like I think that she supports Medicare for all, but they needed to make it into this sort of kludgy thing to sort of, I don't know, you know, like, I don't know who that was for.
Right.
It was useful for Klobuchar last night.
Well, yes. Exactly. I mean, but that's the thing is, like, I don't, it again, it's neither fish nor fowl. Mm-hmm. Klobuchar can say that you still have these wild-eyed ideas, and then other people can say, like, why did you do two steps? That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make any sense. The pay-fors also didn't really do anything.
No half measures, folks.
They went after Buttigieg about disclosing his stuff. It was successful, and maybe it hampered Buttigieg, I think, a little bit. But... you know, one of the things I think they're all learning is that, like, they when they go negative on somebody, it doesn't. There's nobody who's been able to go negative and come out unscathed,
right?
And and I think certainly it seems like Bernie is sort of adhering to that.
Biden. I mean, the foreign policy stuff.
He didn't go.
He didn't.
Let's play that clip of.
Well, I mean, just as a campaign. I mean, they've been pushing stuff out.
Without a doubt. I mean, I was talking specifically about in terms of the debate. Oh, but wait, before we leave that, let's this I found sort of disturbing. Here's let's go back to this one moment with Morning Joe. Where they actually talked about.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Play the full clip so that people get the context. But
Mika's not your lefty feminist. So that's something just to keep in mind. You know, oftentimes she turns on.
Right. She doesn't like uppity women.
Despite writing books on feminism.
Right.
She's not, you know, a big Me Too fan.
She doesn't. Yeah. She doesn't like uppity women, I think, is really the part of them.
Saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
I am completely confused as to why it turned from Bernie Sanders saying I didn't say it to Elizabeth Warren being asked, what did you think when he said it? He says he didn't say it. So you turn to Elizabeth Warren and say, did he say it?
Bizarre.
That's the issue.
That was bizarre.
I mean, it's bizarre.
It was.
What the heck happened there? Are they listening? Because you got to listen when you do a debate.
Yeah.
And then take the question to the next candidate.
You just missed.
It was a miss.
You were waiting to go.
But this is the story.
It was a miss.
By the way, I've had conversations, private conversations, taken to the press and totally manipulated for the benefit of the person who was sharing the story. This happens all the time. It's clear there's a misunderstanding, or Elizabeth Warren is focused on something that was said. And Bernie Sanders is not going to be someone who says, I don't think a woman could win. That's just stupid.
Right. It would not be smart.
Bernie went to her in 2015 and said, hey, I think you can win. I think you should run for president.
This is a terrible issue to bring up.
One more point about this. Okay, even if he did say it, which he didn't, I'm not even going to entertain that, actually. Forget that. Why would she wait until now to have a fight over it? Why would she suddenly be so mad at him that she does not shake his hand when she was palling around with him before? If she was so mad about this, why did she have to wait to release it? Or forget about even releasing it. Why was she? I mean, if you're like that mad at him.
Well, I don't think she's that mad at him. I don't think that's the way they're trying to play it.
Well,
I think to a certain extent.
Didn't shake his hand.
Well, that, yes.
That's some cold shit.
Well,
she
shook
Netanyahu's hand.
She's trying to show that she can be tough. And this is what they're doing. And sadly for the campaign, it was the only thing that they could find. Mm-hmm. They did this off of the script that was going around, which, you know, the campaign, which we should say the Sanders campaign disavowed that script. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out it was actually the script that the campaign was responsible for that script.
But who cares? Every campaign has them.
Absolutely.
Thompson should be called out for this. What kind of reporter are you?
Exactly. Well, they were trying to, you know, hype it. I mean, this is what campaigns do. And I think either the Warren people needed an inciting event. That's why I think this was all very targeted, and it does not make any sense that they thought they were going to get Bernie voters out of this.
Right.
I think, again, they're just going after Biden and Buttigieg voters, that, and we'll see if it works.
Yeah, they know the Bernie voters are not changing their minds at this point.
Well, yeah, I just think that, like, you know, a tame notion that he questioned whether a woman could win in this environment when everybody knows the backstory between the two of them, I think is just... It's not about convincing Bernie voters. It's about, and we'll see if it works. If it works, then they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, as I suspect, then they don't care about what, the scorched earth. Mm-hmm. And they're bad at their jobs. Well, and frankly, I agree with you. I've seen this sort of like litany of things. And people got to remember, in 2018, when she came to, when they had that conversation, mm-hmm. And it was reported at the time.
2015?
No, 2018, when they had the conversation.
Oh, this conversation. Sorry, I got confused.
It was reported at that time
right.
that they were meeting.
Right.
And I think that had the DNA stuff not happened, it's not inconceivable to me that Bernie would have been like, you run. Yeah. I mean, it certainly at that time, it wasn't inconceivable to me.
He held off for a while.
And I mean, he was building up. I mean, I think he was like sort of like, you know, making sure that he was ready to commit if he was going to commit. But it's also quite possible, and I'm speculating here totally, that he didn't want to say, you botched the DNA stuff so bad that that's why. He could have said, like, I think in this environment it's going to be very, very difficult.
Well, it was very early on when she did the she persisted thing. She started selling gear, and she brought on Clinton advisors. So, you know... There's a personal relationship between them, but you are a reflection of your campaign. Your decisions you make, the people you bring on, you know, in every campaign, they have a certain methodology and you're taking advice from them. And so as much as they might be friends or were friends back then, she made a conscious decision to bring on some pretty unsavory people to give her advice, you know, early on in the race. And that's why I always say follow the money, because you know, you can see what's the signals, where they're going to go early on right. by who they hire.
Well,
yeah, and
she is
in charge of what happens in their own campaign.
Yes. And she is actually sort of, I don't know if she coined this, but she is closely associated, particularly like with the CFPB, that policies are personnel, or personnel are policies.
Right.
And so
right.
It is what it is. I mean, that's for me, I don't get that invested in the idea of like she was mean to Bernie or she, you know, backstabbed him or anything like that. Like if it was my candidate who was backstabbing somebody because it was going to help them win, go for it. This is not, maybe I'm hardened from decades of watching Survivor mm-hmm. On CBS. But I think what the worst part about this for me in terms of, you know, my thinking about Warren is that I do not think that she is particularly strong when it comes to electorate facing politics.
Right.
I think there is every reason to believe that she is very, very good at playing institutional politics.
That's right.
Because I think there's a lot of evidence to that effect, but I keep seeing indications that she's not strong when it comes to doing public facing politics. And I think this is indicative of it.
That's the point was just brought up about the WFP, who I've, you know, used to be friends with, and then they went after me, and I'm just, you know, sorry, but that's what happens
right.
in politics.
Right.
They will go after their own if they, you know, institutions, organizations, especially organizations that appear to be grassroots but actually are top down, will make these kinds of decisions. And I think organizations like WFP and PCCC are now in a really difficult position because their financial support, their voting support, if they're Democratic at all, is really aligned with Bernie. And they supported Warren, and now they're getting pushback. And so, you know, my guess is they were probably left out of this conversation. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, actually, I don't know. Knowing some of the people there, if they were or if they were part of this. But at the end of the day, they need cover. At least publicly, they need cover in that they have to at least appear to be progressive and not agree with this and make it sound like there were four people in the room who made this decision without them knowing.
I'm going to make a prediction that if Warren comes in third or fourth, in Iowa, and then, you know, only comes in second in New Hampshire. We're going to start to hear stories by, let's see, you know, mid to late February, we're going to start to hear stories of like,
what
it
happened?
It's, you know, Joe Rosbar's fault.
Yeah. This yeah, of course.
We're going to start to hear. And so, but we'll see.
So I just want to reiterate, this is kind of the same thing I said with Cenk. Even if Bernie had said something sexist, like the majority of men are sexist. I don't care. I'm balancing this against my material interests, and I'm going to vote for the candidate that's going to get me health care.
Yeah, but I don't think that, I mean, I think that, you know, the point is that all the people who think that already, this is not for them.
Right. And why even give them that? Because, I mean, I don't, entertaining that argument, Cenk tweeted something out actually like that the other day. And I respectfully disagree. Why even entertain their argument? Why even repeat it? Why give them that? That's what they want you to do. They want you to go down the rabbit hole and get stuck in this space and solidify the Bernie bros. And, you know, I'm joking about the Bernie bros, but that is what, that is the evidence they now take to. That's step three in this process. Right. They go on CNN, complain about the Bernie bros, get all the Hillary loyalists riled up.
Use the reactions as the way to maintain another day of this news.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do we want to watch Klobuchar Rick Perriott before we move on?
Oh, yeah. Let's. This is Klobuchar got confused as to where she was in her notes. And then I also, and then I want to do Bernie's rock thing, because that was, I think, you know, in terms of moments that I took away. We should also say, well, go ahead. This is Amy Klobuchar what do you say to people who think a woman can't win the election?
Again, has a woman governor right now, and she beat a Republican, Gretchen Whitmer. Kansas has a woman governor right now, and she beat Kris Kobach. And her name is, I'm very proud to know her, and her name is Governor Kelly. Thank you.
Oh, third, Governor Kelly.
I would add to this.
She did get it.
But she said thank you. It's like just somebody mouthed
under
her.
The
right.
Buzzer.
Yeah. That happens. I mean, that happens to me probably every 15 minutes on the show.
Comforter.
Yeah. But
it's just especially, it would have been especially bad with the script of I'm proud to know her name.
Right. I'm proud to know her.
I specifically memorized the name.
I'm surprised they were allowed to bring notes on stage. She was reading from her notes, unless she was writing it on
stage. They could be writing on stage. I mean, because Warren did say at one point, like, I've been taking notes on what we have not been talking about.
Steyer had weird X's on his hand, too. I don't know what that was about.
Oh, that's just the way he, that's the way he's signaling.
Like some billionaire.
Steyer, you know, anecdotally on Twitter and on, you know, I've been reading, like, Steyer, you know, did himself some favors. I mean, he was drafting behind everybody, it seemed like, to a certain extent. There was a lot of like, I agree with Bernie and I agree with Warren. And I think that to me signals that he is setting up a run for Senate in California because he's, you know, like I agree with the two people who are going to probably come in, you know, first and second maybe or in California. So
although his answer to be prepared for this for you may be running off fossil fuels. What is this?
Wow, that is weird.
He's straight edge.
Billionaires, man, you can't trust him.
What is that going on? That's got to be some type of like nuministic, like memory technique.
Yeah,
type
I
of
think
thing.
So.
Like
four corner, you got four finger.
Right,
boxes
hit the quads, hit the quads. But why wouldn't you just put like a Q?
Remember when Sarah Palin did that? She had it on her hand, the notes on her hand.
That's weird.
Remember
that?
Why I do you not remember that, but that's hilarious.
Why
Sarah
you put
Palin
it on
in
your
a debate
palm?
Against Joe Biden had. Notes. I can't remember what it said on there. Like, remember your name.
I wonder if he's sending a message to Putin. All right. So let's listen to this one clip. To the extent that Joe Biden was involved in this debate, it really only happened here. And I think, and we should say that the less Joe Biden is involved in a debate, the more he has won.
Yep.
And short of there being these moments where he seemed to be searching for what he was talking about and his typical jibber jabber that he gets into. And, you know, he just keeps jawboning in this cadence that you just basically tune out and just assume that it has some coherence. Mm-hmm. Biden did, you know, mission accomplished for Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. He got through another debate. and no disasters. I mean, I think, you know, there was probably all of his advisors. That's what they all text each other in the group text or, you know, whatever their signal channel is or whatever.
He didn't forget his daughter's name.
No disasters. Mission accomplished. This moment was really, impressed me just as a moment. There was nothing, I don't know that he said anything any different here, Sanders, in terms of our involvement in the war, but the way he delivered this mm-hmm. or the way that there was a quality, this is indicative of a quality that he had last night that I felt was slightly different. There was this sense, and maybe it's because there's a certain amount of confidence that the campaign has right now in terms of where they're positioned. Because, you know, their whole theory is that we have votes that will not be seen right. by pollsters
right.
because of our organization, because of the nature of our campaign, not just that we don't just have a ground game. We have a fundamentally different campaign
right.
that has been attempted in the past. And therefore, if we're doing it right, our polls should reflect 10 points, 5 points, 7 points, 12 points. I don't know what the number is they have in their head. Our polls should be a certain amount less than we actually have. And so I think there's a certain amount of confidence. And he seemed a little bit more confident than normal. And this answer was indicative of that.
Before I tell you that, let me tell you something else.
Can we go back just a little bit?
Yeah, the question.
We can't. Okay. All right. Because she... CNN asked some specific question, and he said, give me one second, and that's what he did.
And that is, and I don't know if my colleagues here will agree with me or not, maybe they will, but what we have to face as a nation is that the two great foreign policy disasters of our lifetimes were the war in Vietnam and the war in Iraq. Both of those wars were based on lies. And right now, what I fear very much is we have a president who is lying again and could drag us into a war that is even worse than the war in Iraq. To answer your question, what we need to do is have an international coalition. We cannot keep acting unilaterally. As you know, the nuclear deal with Iran was worked on with a number of our allies. We have got to undo what Trump did, bring that coalition together, and make sure that Iran never gets a nuclear weapon.
There was just something about his cadence there and the idea of stating, you know, of going back to Vietnam mm-hmm. on some level and working that in and seeing that and sort of attempting to look to his colleagues for like, I think we can all agree on this and stay. I don't know. I don't know what it was about.
I wish he'd done one thing, though, you know, and I remember thinking this in the moment that if he could just add one line that illustrates that he is the only candidate on that stage who has a fundamentally different take on foreign policy.
Right.
He mentioned interventionalism, but you know, at the end of the day, he is, I mean, that's why he feels confident. First off, he knows it very well. Second, he's been, you know, fighting this, whatever his foreign policy ideals since he was a teenager, essentially. And frankly, I think this was right after Warren spoke. Her foreign, despite sitting on the Foreign Services Committee, which is shocking to me, she was so weak on that answer. Do we have that clip at all? It was like somebody was, you know, asked to go on a talk show and was like a different expert and then brought in to talk about foreign policy and had a, you know, jumble together a bunch of, like a Cliff Note version.
I don't
know.
Do you remember
that? She was afraid to take a stand on it.
It was very weak.
I had it at 17 minutes past the hour. Mm-hmm. Well, that was her talking on the troops.
Yes, and then Biden even, he couldn't hold back and he corrected her on troops. He said, well, what kind of troops
exactly.
are you talking about? Combat troops? Or he was basically like, could you be more specific?
Yeah.
I don't know if that came across to the audience, but maybe I'm just watching a little bit more carefully.
All right, well... we got to head into the fun half anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
and we'll look for that clip as well. When we get into the fun half, we're going to be talking about what's going on with impeachment, and we're going to end up talking about impeachment more on Friday, I have a feeling. But but we will touch on it. We're going to touch on it at least where we are, because it's important for people to start digesting what's happening with this Lev Parnas stuff, because unless this is some type of like bizarre R, you know, rat F, this is very explosive material, and it's very hard to imagine that. I don't know if Pelosi knew this stuff was coming down the pike or whatnot. I mean, they were waiting on Parnas's ability to sort of release these documents and other legal things. And I think as that came closer, but right now there are some Republican senators who I think are very nervous, because there is at least some documentary evidence that suggests that Lev Parnas was part of essentially a conspiracy or a gang, if you will, I don't know, with Rudy Giuliani and a guy who's running for a Republican office in Connecticut, who were literally targeting. And I don't mean just in a way that, like, you know, you target a campaign or you target a demo or something like that. Literally, we're surveilling, stalking, and taking a threatening posture towards our ambassador in Ukraine. And when you start to piece together some of these things, it sounds like the State Department, when they gave her a warning that she needed to get out of there, like within the next day, because you're in physical danger, that physical danger was actually coming from this gang.
Administration too.
And there's also evidence in these documents that Rudy Giuliani claimed that he was speaking on behalf of the president, and more. I mean, it's crazy stuff, and it hasn't gotten, you know, with all the hubbub, you know, like this is the kind of thing that would be.
This is a movie.
That's how I pitched it at the beginning of the show. It's like sort of like a cheaper Scorsese script. all right, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, and Nomi and I will discuss these things and more. And just a reminder, you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get the free half, free of commercials. You also get extra content. Like the fun half coming up, or like things like last night's debate coverage when the Chapo Trap House gang came in and stormed the studio and nearly tore it apart and got us kicked out of this building.
Are there any whippets left?
Yeah, no kidding. It's all on the floor.
There might be some ketamine crumbs in the bathroom.
Don't forget also, it is... The AM Quickie, you can subscribe to that at amquickie.com, or you can get it through the app, and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Follow Nomi where do you want?
Nomi Key Const on Twitter.
There you go.
Should
let's wait. Okay. and Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, this episode is out now. I speak with Leslie Lee III from Struggle Session about Bong Joon-ho's beautiful and subversive masterpiece, Parasite, which I encourage everyone to see if you haven't yet, and then listen to our episode about it. Also, if you enjoyed Matt Chrisman's cameo on our stream last night, you'll definitely enjoy History is a Weapon, wherein Sean KB and Matt Chrisman just nerd out over history and help you understand things in a way that you maybe didn't before. Did they tell me what this one is about? No, but it's coming out next week and it's going to be awesome. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Yeah, Literary Hangover. Alex and I talk about The Sotweed Factor, a 1708 poem about the Chesapeake area and how it's all run by sort of tobacco farmers and legal scammers, and how Annapolis was a swamp back in the day.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
This guy might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.